Welcome to the Speak Up Talk Radio Network. I am your hostess, Pat Rulo. We bring you hand-selected hosts, podcasts, and talk radio programming with listening options, 24/7 streaming, or listen on demand. We also feature one-on-one segments with important guests, people who have something to say that you need to hear. Visit speakuptalkradio.com. Today, I have a guest with a topic that especially piques my interest since I am quite involved in the healthcare world. She is Sandy Smith. Sandy grew up on a farm with a tremendously large garden. She maintains that if you can't taste the soil on a carrot, it's not fresh enough. Although she now lives with her husband, cats, and three chickens in the city, she still manages to grow fruits and vegetables in their backyard garden. Sandy has been writing since she could hold a pencil, although the lettering she left on her grandmother's picture books sometimes contained a reverse capital R. She won awards for poetry and short stories in high school, and in college was an editor for the school newspaper. With nothing but a degree in communication arts and a desire to go to the ends of the earth, in 1985, Sandy accepted a job teaching English in China. And though she had an idea for a novel or a memoir way back then, the only writing she managed to produce were the many letters home detailing her exploits to friends and relatives. Well, after China, Sandy spent years teaching in private and public schools, filling hordes of notebooks with her writing, this time mostly lesson plans. And along the way, she has written essays, newspaper articles, children's books, and poetry, very little of which she bothered to publish. Sandy currently devotes more time to her writing, resulting in four published novels, the Seed Savers series, poetry, short stories, and more on the way. She's a member of the Alliance of Independent Authors and her local seed bank. She gardens and writes at her home in the beautiful and green Pacific Northwest. Well, I am excited to learn more, so welcome to the show, Sandy.
Thank you. Thank you for having me, Pat.
Oh, it's my pleasure. So you have cats as well, huh?
Yes, yes. One is very old and one is very fat, but we have cats.
I interviewed someone who had cats, and she said her cat wasn't fat. She was, she's just fluffy. That's what, she's just fluffy.
Oh, no. He's a rock.
Okay. I have 11 of them. I've rescued 11 feral cats. I've got them ranging from all over the place. I even have a little deaf one that's kind of a challenge to work with.
Yeah, it's hard when they get old. One of our cats is like, she's 18, 19 years old. So.
That's old.
Yeah.
Yep. Well, now, your books, The Seed Savers, is a series of five books for middle grade readers. Why did you decide to write for young adults rather than older adults?
Well, the main reason was because I was teaching middle school at the time, and that's grades 6, 7, and 8, when I got inspired to write this series, and it seemed like those kids kind of fell in this place where they didn't have a lot of books geared toward them. Right then, Twilight was very popular, right on the heels of Harry Potter, and those were really huge books. And my students were dual language kids, and those books were so big, and so I thought, well, I want to write something and not be too big, you know, that they can read. And I think that's probably why I went with that age range.
Yeah.
But it's tricky to sell that age range. So.
I would imagine it would be, and yet that was your background, so I guess that was your comfort level as well, and you saw the need.
Yeah, I did see the need. Mm-hmm. I actually was in the middle of a novel at that time that was an adult novel, which has never been finished then, because when I was struck with The Seed Savers and then it became a series, I've just been working on that. But my original first novel, like everyone has their first novel, I guess, maybe, was not actually for kids.
Okay. Well, I want to get into the premise of all of your books in a moment, but your focus is on gardening, eating healthy food, the planet care. Why should young people be interested in this?
Well, people always say kids are the future, and so they're the future. They're the ones that need to know this skill, not lose these skills, and also, you know, make the change. And, you know, that's why for kids.
Absolutely. They are going to be running the world one of these days, so we might as well prepare them ahead of time. So what are the titles of your books, and share briefly the premise of each?
Well, the first one is Treasure, then Lily, Heirloom Keeper, and the final one is not out. So right now the title is Unbroken, but it could change.
Mm-hmm.
In the first book, and they do progressively get older, And I did that for a couple of reasons that it, you know, sometimes if people read the first one, they think, oh, it's so young, but they do get older. So in the first book, you have this brother and sister and a friend, and they don't know about what seeds are, and they don't know what real food is because it takes place in the future where gardening has been outlawed. And then over the course of time, the younger people don't even know what real food is because they just have these food groups called protein, sweeties, vities, carbos, and snacks. And it's kind of like if you had a fruit roll-up and bologna, you wouldn't know really what real food is. Mm-hmm. And so in that book, the initial book, they hear the word seed. They don't know what it is. They start to learn from a person of the older generation, and then they're secretly learning this, and then I can't tell too much more without, you know, giving away too much.
Yeah, no spoilers.
But two of the kids end up going on this journey looking to see if there's a place, you know, where there is still gardening and learning about food. And so there's actually a lot of teaching about gardening in that one. And again, I was at school and I was thinking, everybody was talking about literacy, you know, across the subject area, and I was trying to think, well, you know, if I had a novel that could be read in sixth grade science class or gardening classes. And so I was thinking very teacherish when I was writing that first book.
Mm-hmm.
And then the second book is Lily, and I wanted to experiment with some different things. So the first book is told in third person, so then I wrote the second book totally in first person from the point of view of this third friend who got left behind halfway through the first book, which, you know, bugged a lot of people. What happened to the people that didn't go? And so that second book is partway taking place at the same time period as half of the first book and what's going on back home,
mm-hmm.
in front of you. And then you learn a lot of background about kind of the bad guy in the books is called Grimm, the Green Resource Investigation Machine, and that's the government corporate, whatever, that's keeping track of the kids. So you get some background, and you get background on this Seed Savers Uprising. I should have started with the overall, not each book, but anyway, so we're getting it. Then the third book, Heirloom, brings all the characters back in alternating chapters, more background, more building up of how this underground network can make the changes and get the freedoms back. And then Keeper really at a boiling point, and then I need to bring it all together in the last book.
Mm-hmm.
How's that?
That's good. And will the last book be the last book?
Hopefully, yes. I'm trying for five.
You think you're done? What you
I
said you wrote
the reader say, you know, you're going to have to end it sometime. And I've been thinking, why does she say that? Some series go on and on.
Absolutely. That's why I asked, because maybe once you get into the fifth, like, oh, wait, there's still more to talk about.
Well, because it's really hard to bring all the lines together, because as the books go, there's all these other characters and...
Mm-hmm.
Another reason I'm sort of procrastinating on the last book.
There's too much to do. Oh, my.
You read them all, you know, make sure I don't...
Exactly. Miss somebody. So when you said you wrote the first in third person and the second in first person, was one easier for you?
No, not easier. As a reader, I like to read third person.
Mm-hmm.
But I know what's very popular is first person and first person present tense, that I actually really hate that. So I've only done a few short stories with that.
Yeah. Yeah, I was wondering how that would be to make that switch. Did you find yourself falling back, or did it just flow?
Only occasionally. In the third book was kind of hard because the part that Lily tells is always first person, and the rest is third person. So that book actually, chapters go back and forth.
Okay.
So then a mistake can be made.
There you go.
Easily. And then the fourth book as well. So,
okay.
Like I said, I got myself all complicated, but, you know.
That's all right.
I enjoy that process of trying new things, you know.
It's challenging. Exactly. So as you were coming up with the concept of this book, was there a purpose in writing these? I know you wanted to explore the middle grade reader and offer them information about gardening, but was there a deeper purpose behind that?
Well, here's what happened. I was watching Food, Inc. Have you seen that documentary?
Yes.
So I was watching Food, Inc., and A lot of that book is about the food system from the animal, you know, animal thing. But it gets to this part about seeds and crops, and it's talking about a guy who was a seed cleaner. He would clean the seeds for the farmers to go out and plant the next year. And then how he started getting, you know, sued by Monsanto and all this stuff. And then they did this background, you know, in such and such year there were this many seed cleaners, and now there's only about, you know, six in the entire country. And so I'm thinking, wow, that's a job that's like a typewriter repairman. And, and then I thought, I'd never even heard of that, which I obviously should have, you know, growing up on a farm. And then that thought kind of led to, oh, what if you never heard of a seed? And that was kind of just the beginning, and I just felt like there was a book, and I just started writing it, and I wrote it just from that inspiration.
Okay.
Really, really quickly. And so was there a deeper purpose that I wrote it? I guess maybe to make sure that that doesn't happen. Mm-hmm. You read other books like Animal, Vegetable, Miracle by Barbara Kingsolver, and about, like, if kids who don't know that carrots grow underground, or, you know, what's that egg doing in with the chickens? And so if those things are true at various degrees across the country or world, then yeah, I want people not to forget where real food comes from. And so in the books, I try to make this nostalgia for, like, this is all in the past, even though it's not. Like, when you get done reading it, you want to go eat an apple off of a tree, you know, because you can.
Well, you talk about food freedom, and I wonder, do we have food freedom today with Monsanto and GMOs?
Well, seed freedom and food freedom, we still do, but there are a lot of laws being passed in places, and you hear these stories, you know, about people, they're, you know, the thing about milk, raw milk, can't buy that in a lot of places, you can't sell that, and people growing these things, and the government comes in and dumps out their milk and breaks their eggs, and, you know, so there are things like that happening, but, I mean, well, most of us can still garden. I know there's rules about that, too, and that's why some people just think, oh, the books are so scary because of that, but the books really are not that scary, in my opinion. I like really good food, and one of the reasons I wrote it is because, you know, I love food, and I do grow my own food and canned stuff. I was just canning cherries yesterday, and, you know, so write what you knew. I know these things, and I love food, and so that's part of it.
Well, I was thinking before you and I got on the air about the whole idea of food freedom and seed freedom, because I know that Monsanto holds the world patent rights, along with the United States government, for this plant so-called the Terminator. It's a genetic use restriction technology that patented commercial seeds. These seeds actually commit suicide after a single harvest.
I don't know, but if there were a seed like that and that would cross-pollinate and all other seeds could do that, I mean, that would be kind of the end of everything. So, I mean, that's kind of what I worry about a lot with the patented seeds, there's a lot of things. I mean, they come out all the time and say, well, it's not going to hurt your health. Well, let's say it doesn't hurt your health to eat the GMO seeds. It's still the fact that they own the seeds. That's something to be worried about, in my opinion, that they own the seeds.
Right, I agree. And I thought with that, then it could force the farmers to have to return to Monsanto or other GMO seed suppliers to get their new seeds every year so that they couldn't actually save their own seeds.
Right, they can't. They can't. And that's and then you get into this whole money thing, you know, and that's why India is fighting so hard against it, because you buy their seed, you have to keep going back and buying their seed over and over again.
Right.
And then the other thing is also you lose a lot of biodiversity with the kinds of seeds, because, you know, everybody decides that this is the best potato because this is the potato that McDonald's wants us to grow.
Mm-hmm.
And pretty soon nobody knows what a potato should taste like anymore.
Right.
Know, that whole sort of thing.
Yep.
And lettuce, iceberg lettuce. Yeah. Wow, I don't even eat iceberg lettuce anymore.
That's true. And then you've got big corporations like Bill Gates and Rockefeller Foundation and Monsanto and DuPont. They've got this doomsday seed bank off some Norwegian island that is housing 3 or 4 million seeds. So it's interesting that people are saving seeds, and for what purpose? Not real sure.
Well, you know, the thing about that seed bank is, I mean, maybe it's a good idea at some level, but the reason you need to have your own seed libraries and seed banks in your community or in your refrigerator is when you plant the seeds and grow them out every year, they can grow and change and acclimate to the conditions where you live.
Yes.
And so as climate change happens, your seeds are adapting. So you don't want to just take a seed and put it in a vault. I mean, that's okay, but it's not the best way.
Exactly.
And so that's why we have, I grow for our food share seed bank, you know. And there's getting to be a lot more of that, you know, at the local level.
So, well, let's talk about saving seeds. How does an individual go about doing that?
If you start with an open pollinated seed, which you can call it an heirloom seed, but heirloom actually has a little difference, but an heirloom seed would be an open pollinated seed. It's not one that's a hybrid. And hybrid is not GMO. People get those mixed up too. But if you save a hybrid seed, you don't know what your next plant's going to look like, because it could look like any of the plants along the way made into the hybrid. So if you have like an heirloom tomato seed, you know, there could be this process where you put in the water and you let it all fuzzy and everything. But you can also just take them and save them on a piece of paper and they'll still work. And things like pepper seeds are just, you know, you just take them out and you save them and you plant them. There's not a whole lot to it. And there's lots of information, too, online if you want to get specific. Other things are going to be harder, like carrots and lettuce, because you have to let them go a long time till they go to seed, and maybe the seeds are teeny tiny and stuff like that, but they'll work out. I mean, it's like if you have a garden, you've always got plants that just kind of come up on their own because you didn't harvest the seeds and the seeds are out there. I mean, I had a lot of beans come up everywhere just because I didn't manage to pick all my beans off the fence. So then I just moved them to where I wanted them.
So then local seed banks, I guess you can just check online to see if there's any in your area, or you could start one.
Yeah, those would both be good. And there's also libraries, actual book libraries that actually have seed libraries in them now.
Oh, okay.
And you can, like, check them out, plant some, return them. I'm not sure. I haven't actually visited one, but there's quite a few around now. I think that's interesting.
Yes, very. But I bet once you start looking, you'd be surprised.
Right, yeah. And we have a seed giveaway. Of course, it's just seeds that regular come from companies and stuff at the seed bank. And when it first started about 4 years ago, you know, about 30 people came. And then this year, there were just like lines out the door. So I think more and more people are thinking about seeds and growing their own.
Excellent.
Vegetables.
And then you also speak to children in schools. Tell us about that.
I haven't actually done that lately, but I do author visits where I come and I don't focus. Well, I'll focus on whatever the teacher wants me to focus on, but usually it's on reading and writing because, you know, that fits well into a literature class as an author, and kids like to see real authors. I always wonder, what's a not real author? You know, but they're always very impressed. And I have a lot of questions to ask, and I always tell them that if they want to be a writer, they need to read, because growing up, I didn't care about reading very much, and I think that was just because I liked to be outside playing a lot, and also I probably was not introduced to a lot of books that were of interest to me because I went to a really small school.
Mm-hmm.
But I always liked to write. But you're just going to be a lot better writer if you're a reader. And so I always stress that. And then I always say that, and I love to read now. So it's just because you think you don't like to read now, you might still someday, you know, and just really encourage them to read as well as write.
Well, exactly. But it might just be the fact that they need to find something that interests them.
Yeah, That's very true. And I think that's what happened to me, because we didn't actually have a library at my school. We just had, like, the bookshelf in the room.
Okay, not much to pick from.
No. I pretty much read all the Hardy Boys and Nancy Drew.
So what has been the response from both your young readers and adults from your Seed Savers series?
Well, the people I hear from, you know, really like it. It's just a little hard to get the word out. And I do like it when they'll tell me some specific thing that they like the best, because, you know, if someone just reads your book and goes, wow, that was a great book, I mean, that's good. But when they say, I really like the part about George Washington, there's a city in Washington State named George. And so in the book, the kids have this argument about George Washington. He's a person. No, it's a place. I'm from there, you know. And so this one, like, 10-year-old girl was telling, I really like that place. And the mom says, yeah, she asked me, you know, if it was really there. And so it's really nice when someone can tell me, like, the little details that they like, because I like to throw in stuff like that, like the seed library I was telling you about. Mm-hmm. There's a scene about, you know, the seed libraries, and what's a seed library and everything. So I do a lot of research so that I have a lot of real things in there, even though they're fiction books. Fiction books take a lot of research sometimes.
Absolutely. I was going to ask you if there was much research involved in that.
Yeah. It's interesting because my characters are always moving around, traveling, you know, and so that was kind of hard for me to write about this ride to New Jersey, because I have not been around there, and so I think about, oh, I've probably really messed that up. I can do now with Google Earth, and back when I started writing, but I actually got to go to Tennessee and through the Smoky Mountains for this one part for Heirloom, because my son was going to college in Tennessee. And so after I came back, they hadn't published it yet, and I rewrote a lot of it, because having been there, you know, I could really see it and add things and take things out and say, oh, man, they would have had a hard time getting through here, you know, because they're always, like, on a bicycle or on a motorcycle. And then I'll hear from people, too. Somebody will write me from Florida and say, I don't know if that library in Florida should have a basement or not. And I said, well, my data reader brought that up, and I looked up that city, and they do have basements there.
Oh, gosh. I can't believe people actually would contact a writer to say that they shouldn't have a basement in a fictional
library.
Well, she
was questioning it. Wasn't sure. She was a master gardener in Florida who had read my book and liked them, and she was on my newsletter list, and so she, and I like it when any reader contacts me, you know.
Sure.
And I heard from her again recently, because I said something. She goes, well, actually, you're in Florida, and so I'm like, okay, great. You know, I don't get thousands of emails from readers. If I did, I would probably feel differently.
There you go.
But I like hearing from people, you know.
Well, sure, it gives you some feedback. Writing is a lonely business, and you're writing and you don't know if anybody's reading or what they're thinking. And I bet there's
That's
a lot of
right.
people that really do appreciate your books, but don't take the time to reach out and comment, you know?
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So now, when you were writing these books, did you come up with an outline ahead of time, or were you just kind of free flow writing?
I am a pantser.
Okay.
There are pantsers and plotters.
Plotters.
And pantsers are the seat of the pants, and that's the way I write. And you have to be less of a pantser in a series as the series goes on.
Now, you found that out, right?
Yes.
I love that. So where do you write? Do you have a special writing place?
Oh, it has changed. I used to write them all, and I may still. I have one more left. On the Seed Savers books, I wrote them all actually in notebooks first and not on my computer, but I don't think that's going to happen for the last one. And so then I could write really anywhere if I could take that notebook with me. And then I had moved my office to my son's room, and then he came back and kicked me out. And so right now, I'll have to say, I'm not a person that goes down and sits in a cafe somewhere. I write at home, and right now I'm just at a table in the dining room on my laptop where I'm doing most of it, but it'll change. But definitely I write at home, because I just always need to go find something else, you know, and I don't think I could be one of those not at home writers.
I agree. I don't think I could either. If I was sitting in a coffee shop, just the sounds would be so distracting to me. I couldn't concentrate. Even gum chewing would have to stop me in my tracks. So I have to be really
quiet.
Yeah,
and I have often thought about getting some noise canceling headphones, just because I grew up in a school where everything was absolutely quiet, and I'm not one of these people who can listen to music and write. I have to have quiet.
Me too.
Or music without words. That would be okay.
Yeah, I get it. I'm the same. Okay. So now your publishing process. Tell us a bit about that.
Well, so I wrote the first book in, it was either 2010 or 2011. And so, you know, I sent out all these agent things, and that wasn't getting me anywhere. And then in 2012, in January, I went to the library to listen to somebody who had self-published. And up until then, I, like most people, didn't think much about that. But then I started researching it and found out this whole new revolution was taking place. And so I started to learn how to do everything to publish my own book in paperback and then ebooks, and it's a lot of work. and it would probably be better if I would just, you know, always pay more money for better programs and stuff. But I do not do the covers myself because that's, you have to draw the line somewhere.
Right.
It's work, and I'm always trying to learn how to, well, besides the publishing, then there's the marketing, and that's something that I'm working on. And that's when I say the middle grade thing is hard online because middle graders don't have credit cards, you know, and they don't shop online, so that's a hard part. But I do actually enjoy a lot of it when I'm not tearing my hair out about something that the computer's not doing right. you know, it's kind of like as a teacher, you know, I actually liked writing tests and lesson plans.
Mm-hmm. No, I think the self-publishing, I'm so glad that that finally arrived because there's so much talent and so much good work out there that should not be ignored. So, yeah, my hat's off to the whole self-publishing world.
Yeah, I know, because, I mean, if vampires are what's popular and you have a book that's about underground gardening.
Yeah, no.
Featuring kids, it's not something that they're really looking for in New York City, I think, across their desk.
No, but it doesn't mean that it's not important and necessary. So, yes, I'm glad that
right,
you...
That's
yeah.
Right, that's
mm-hmm.
right. And now there's so much more help out there for people who are just starting self-publishing. There was when I started, but not as much. I mean, there's things now that I just found last year. It's like, well, where was this when I needed this? And then I'll look at, oh, I see this one.
Just started.
This wasn't here yet. This wasn't published yet, this little page that's telling me what I needed to know back then.
Yep.
So I think it's easier in some ways, but there's also some, you know, it's not as easy to just, like, hit gold like it was. Maybe the year I wrote my book, a lot of people were, the Amazon algorithms were different and doing really well. And, of course, at that time, I was still sending out my little emails to agents. So I always feel like, shoot, it's just behind what I should have been doing. But
that's okay. At least you understand the entire process now.
Yeah, I do.
Yep,
I do.
So what's next for you? What's coming up after? I mean, I know you're working on your fifth book, but anything else in your mind?
Well, actually, I had one of these things where I had this other book that I just needed to write. So I've been working on it, and I've got about 40,000 words on it, which is why I haven't got the fifth Seed Saver. And that's not Seed Savers at all. And I don't want to say anything because it seems like when you're an author and you're writing a book and trying to describe it, I don't know. I mean, I often think about what Stephanie Meyer must have told people. Yeah, I'm writing about, you know, these vampires and werewolves and love triangles, and people must just roll their eyes. But big hit, you know. So I don't want to say anything about that book, but I'm going to finish that book, like, really soon, like maybe in 2 weeks. But then I'm going to write this book, and then I've got about 3 or 4 other short stories and novellas and novels that have been started and never finished. And, yeah, I always have ideas.
Good.
I'm not as good as most people about the seat in the chair thing, you know, like every day. And that really is the key, by the way. I did try it recently, like just 500 words every day. It's enough. And then if you skip a week, it's really hard. So,
mm-hmm.
Every day, people.
You know, it's like a muscle. You've got to use it every day. And then when you sit down feeling uninspired, maybe by the time you get to your 500th word, you're feeling inspired, and there you go. So.
Oh, yeah, and 500 is actually nothing.
I know.
It's a little thing.
I know.
But it helps you because then you're doing it every day, and your story's going, and the words are piling up, and you haven't forgotten what's happening.
Yep. So. Good advice. Thank you. Well, now, is there anything we missed that you would like to talk about today?
I wanted to say that I think that these books would be great for, since they're, well, adults like them, but since they're for kids, in all these school gardening classes, and that was always my hope, it's just hard to get the word out there. So if there's anybody with gardening classes with kids and they want to add, you know, novels to it, this is a series. There.
That's a good point, because I know just locally our library has little gardening classes in the summer or workshops, and these books would be perfect for that.
Yeah, and you know, because most gardening books are nonfiction, which is fine. How to garden.
Mm-hmm.
And my books are not how to garden. My books are why to garden. Why it's important to know this and not forget about it.
Excellent. Then share with us, where can listeners go to learn more about you, and where can they purchase your books?
Well, my website is authorssmith.com, and my books are available digitally and paperback on Amazon, and then Nook, Barnes & Noble, Hobo. I mean, they're all over the place, and there's links on my website.
Okay.
Those.
So that's a good
place.
And
then I'm also, you know, on Facebook, Instagram, and everything is Author S. Smith. So. Oh.
Good place to start is your website, authorssmith.com. So folks,
yeah.
Start saving your seeds and start reading Sandy's book, Seed Saver Series. And Sandy, what a pleasure to meet you today. This was a topic I'm very interested in, and I'm going to do some more research in my local area and start saving some more seeds. Thank you so much.
Thank you very much.